You're listening to Red Setter, your guide to digital cinema, filmmaking, and cutting-edge imaging.
Hello and welcome to this week's Red Center, episode number 48. And I'm in the studio, and Jason, you are not, only because we're recording this on a Saturday.
We are indeed. Much as I love you, Mike, I'll stay home. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Appreciate that. And today we've been covering primarily the red, well, like almost exclusively the red announcements that happened first thing this morning, Sydney time, about 3 o'clock. Actually, they started leaking before 3 o'clock LA time, when Red rolled out their basically their roadmap for Epic in terms of getting it in the hands of customers. Sort of a roadmap for Epic for the next sort of say 6 months in detail, including pricing options and what's going on. And Jason, I guess there's been a bit of a mixed reaction to this.
Just a little.
And I think that, I don't know, do you have a sense of where that frustration is coming from or why there's a mixed reaction?
Well, I think part of it, and obviously part of the wider spread and this, you know, the growth in Red user has been, you know, a year plus ago's announcement of Scarlet. And obviously the major frustration today has been, what about Scarlet? You know, what's happening? Why, you know, it's great to hear about Epic X, but there's part of the wide appeal has been the sort of, you know, the potential launch of the lower end cameras. And, you know, hey, what happened?
Well, here's the thing. We are in a second going to cross to Ted Chulowitz from Red. He's talking to us from Los Angeles, and we're going to go into a detailed rollout. But as we discuss in that interview, it is really an Epic-focused day. There isn't much in the way of Scarlet news, and perhaps that's just an expectation management problem. Perhaps the problem is that people were expecting to be like Scarlet would be first, and that Scarlet would be what would they be hearing about. And also maybe just the voices that are the sort of voices that are on Twitter are those owner-operators that would be more likely to buy a Scarlet than maybe the rental houses that that are interested in more serious kit.
Absolutely. Look, I think obviously the more pro guys, the more sort of Epic and full frame and the Red One users are a little bit more, I don't mean to be down on the more Scarlet interested people. I would definitely have loved one, but not as my main shooting camera. So that has definitely been, that is where a lot of the noise has sort of come from. Red One people are probably likely to be already owners and, you know, kind of have been through the experience of the Red One and, you know, kind of, especially with these announcements today, and now know what they're in for. I think perhaps, as you're right, managing expectations would have been great. Perhaps this should have been, today should have been called Epic Day, because as Ted will no doubt touch on, November 30th is going to be Scarlet Day. So we've got another month to wait to find out more about Scarlet. So it would have been good to know, you know, maybe they could have called this Epic Day and would have sort of kept a few people, you know, happy. But go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I think the second criticism is the sense of stop talking about it, just do it. My point to that is that I'm a complete, exponent of that point of view. I've actually been saying exactly that myself. I said, you know, if you're going to just change all the specs and stuff, just do it yourself and tell me when it's ready to go. But what we are actually talking about here now is the rollout of Epic, because the first cameras are going to be rolling out in the next 4 to 6 weeks. So that's actually about the right time to be telling people what's going on, because, you know, if you've got to raise 28 grand, you can't raise 28 grand overnight, and it'll be very annoying.
People have been knowing that 28 grand is going to be, you know, this has been the price since the December announcements last year.
Yes and no. I mean, for example, take myself. If I was thinking of buying an Epic, today I discovered that I could not buy an Epic through trade-in and actually buy it at the full $28,000 price and get about $10,000 worth of free kit thrown into the mix and keep my Red One and have an option to upgrade my Red One for $4,500 to have a Mysterium X chip. Now, quite frankly, as a business owner, as a co-founder of the company that owns our Red, I need time to weigh that up, talk to the directors, decide what we're going to do, and put the money on the table. And if I was to reserve a camera and let that fall through within 30 days, I'd have lost not only my place in the queue, but forfeit all trade-in rights to my Red One in the future. So,
is, dare I say it, a little harsh?
Well, but all I'm
I
saying
understand
is,
where they're coming from.
But all I'm saying is, it would be harsh, I think, if they were releasing the camera today. If they said cameras are available today, I would say, well, bugger because I can't get over to LA today. I need a moment or two to get sorted, and I don't want to get bumped back in the queue because I wasn't ready to roll. Yeah. I think one of the things we don't discuss with Ted but explicitly, but I have discussed is and researched is what you know how you pick these options. So just quickly, there are four options. We'll go into those with Ted in detail, the first of which is a beta program, the second of which is keep your Red 1 and get an Epic X, the third is trade in your Epic your Red 1 and get an Epic X, and then the fourth one is just wait till all the testing's over and the Epic X's are out of the way and I'll just buy an Epic, thanks very much for playing.
Yes, so stage 3 essentially reflects the original sort of Epic X plan that was announced in December, basically of you know the trade in your Red 1 for $17,500 off the price of $28,000 for an Epic X. So that is now stage 3. So yeah, there's been a lot more. I'm glad you've had a bit more time to get your head around this because I must admit it's my Winnie the Pooh brain here is sort of spinning it even at four options.
Well,
and the fact that they're called stages and not options, I think, is possibly a bit confusing.
They are options that are available in stages. That's true, though. The thing that is the new wild card is this idea that we're going to bundle a bunch of stuff with the camera, and that bunch of stuff will be effectively thrown in. So, for example, whereas before the offer was, and this is why I actually personally find it that I'm coming down on this. I'm not going to say I'm offended, but I'm going to come down very heavily on the side of I'm very happy today because I went into today as a user thinking I would trade in my Red 1, I would get an Epic back, and they would give me $17,500 back on the price of a $28,000 Epic X. And that seemed like a phenomenally good deal because I can tell you Canon didn't offer me any trade-in on my old 5D when I bought a new Canon. So that right there is unheard of to get you all the money back that I spent on the body by trading it in. But we knew right?
Yeah. I'm getting no emails from Apple about this 2007 Mac Pro I'm staring at to see whether I get a full refund on on this year's model.
But then today, in addition to that, they offered to throw in a whole bunch of kit worth maybe $5,000. I mean, am I missing something here? Why isn't that a joyous piece of, oh my God, that's an incredible deal?
This is stage one right now.
That's stage three. That is, okay, is the existing three. Deal is that I would give my Red 1 back and get $17,500. And today they upped the ante and said, oh, not only are you only going to have to pay $10,500, but by the way, I'll let me see about this. I'll give you an LCD monitor and a Red remote and a CF car module and maybe some batteries and, I don't know, well, a couple of batteries would be good to recharge it. Anything else you'd kind of want? I mean, now you might argue reasonably, well, on a Canon camera, for example, all that stuff comes as standard. But as of yesterday, I didn't think that I was getting that stuff, and now I am. Yeah.
Well, if you look at the original pictures of the Epic X, it looks like it's got, it was when it was slightly less modular, it looked like it had an in-out. It's got three red batteries. There's a red moat on the back. There is a lot, apart from the LCD, there is a lot in there. But yes, obviously they've included some more stuff for sure.
But for the option that I'm putting my hand up for, the tattoo option, which is option one, let's go into the beta program.
Yes.
I'm getting the Bomb EVF, which alone is worth, thousands of dollars. And I already have an EVF. There's nothing wrong with my EVF. I can use that. But, it is not to be sneezed at that I get a $3,200 new EVF. And I get the Pro module. And I get a bunch of other goodies worth about $10,000. Yep. And, again, you might say, well, that's stuff that should be included anyway. So what are you getting so excited about? But, nevertheless, I get to keep my Red 1.
Yeah.
And I can upgrade that to a Mysterium X chip, which will give me increased ISO, latitude, etc. For $4,500, which gives a second life to my Red 1 if I choose to do that.
Absolutely. And you are obviously up for the full $28,000. There's no sort of trade backs to that. You still, but you keep your Red 1.
Unless I went to option 2, which would be I keep my Red 1.
You're calling it option 2. It's stage 2.
I'm sorry. All right. I was trying to use your... But okay, please. Whatever. So let's say I forget about Tattoo, the beta program, and I just buy an Epic. Then I've now got a choice of trading in my Epic or not changing... Sorry, trading in my Red 1 or not trading in my Red 1. If I choose to trade it in, I get that 17.5 grand that we spoke about, which is great. If I choose not to trade it in, they're still going to give me a discount of 8.5 grand and throw in about 7 grand's worth of kit. Did I miss something? Is this not a good deal?
It is a good deal. I think it's the fact that everyone was probably hoping that at 9 o'clock, the gates of Red would open, and Jim would walk out with a little red velvet rope, plonk it down at the front door, and say, "Okay, the line starts here. This is how much it's going to be. Give us your cash now." And everyone would have a full list of cameras, a full list of all the costs of all the accessories. Where do I stand? How much do I pay? I guess that's where.
Okay, if you leave Scarlet out for a second, if you say that you absolutely have not got that for Scarlet, although you have got some of that for Scarlet, not only that, but I have most of that for Epic right now, except it isn't today. It's 4 weeks from now or 6 weeks from now, but it's before Christmas. I'm going to get an Epic camera. It's going to be really, really, really cool. It's going to have lots of cool things about it that I think I'm pleasantly surprised about, like GPS. Like tons of new sensors, but all than that, it has electronic focus, the thing that we've been going on about for ages. It's got, you know, wireless interfaces and gigabit Ethernet and, you know, motion sensors and a ton of extra bits and pieces. It's not like the specs have gone down.
And you get the opportunity to feed back on that and improve things for stage 2, 3.
For you know, 200 to 8,000 ISO with a new floating point wider dynamic range color science thing thrown in for as part of the new tech that they're coming up with. So there's a bunch of cool things in there. I mean, I really love the idea of being able to output 1080p, but it's 1080p from the full sensor, properly down-res in the camera, as opposed to binning or line-throwing away to get down.
Yeah.
And then I can get that out at 60 frames a second. So you could say, well, we're just shooting HD for this today because that's all we really need. And I quite frankly don't want to fill up my hard drive with 5K, but I'll just take that out where it's been, you know, sampled at a much higher resolution. So it would completely resolve to 1080p, right? Because you're way above Nyquist theory at 5K over 1080p.
Yeah.
And yet it would do that in the camera, disk space, and it would go up to 60 frames a second.
Well, yeah, it's brilliant.
And it would be 800 ISO or whatever it is. And it would be, now look, you know, it's an expensive camera, but this is the professional pro rental house camera, the Epic. It's not.
Yeah, again, we're all spoiled rotten. This is, you know, we call it an expensive camera, but you know, for what it's doing, you know, there is no comparison. There is nothing that will do this, really, for anything anywhere near this money.
So I'm personally just of the school that I really, really like it. And I think it's a fair deal, and I think it's good. I wanted to just outline.
Look, you know, obviously, sorry, Mike, but obviously, what Red have been saying for a long time, particularly with the Epics, is that look, you know, get in now. Why not just go and get a Red? Buy a Red One. You're going to be able to have all these options. You can use a camera that's great that you can use now, and you know you're going to be able to upgrade it, or you're going to be able to trade in. You know, they've been saying that for quite a while. So, you know, I guess there's no real sort of excuses for saying, oh, but I want a beard. Yeah, I want a tattoo as well.
Just how this is going to work, in case any of you are wondering, you don't phone up Red tomorrow morning or Monday morning and ask to be getting a tattoo. Jared's attitude is, we'll contact you. Don't phone us, we'll phone you. And then they will announce how they will roll out the ability for people to commit to this 30-day window on the stage 2 and stage 3, the idea being that they're, you know, not only dealing with the camera bodies themselves, but making sure they've got enough peripheral items so that they can meet a working camera config. And that's another reason why they've bundled up stuff into the camera configs, because the idea is that they believe with these particular configuration of accessories, they'll be able to meet demand.
Yeah, well, that is one of the things I'm sort of gleaning from the info so far is that, I mean, obviously, particularly for you, Mike, with Tattoo, it looks like there'll be very limited accessories out there. You won't get all that you need right up front. You'll definitely get the camera and enough to sort of run it and turn it on, but some of the other accessories will be sort of rolling out slowly. And that sounds like that still will be a case possibly for stage two. Most accessories will be available, and obviously they'll slowly trickle out. But even for stage two, it does sound a little bit like the original Red One, where you know accessories are of limited supply, and you can have a camera, but you won't necessarily get everything else up front.
Yeah, I mean the good news is that that there is now a clear beta program, a non-beta program, whereas before it was just Red One. We're in continuous beta, and then we all agreed, well, I'm reckon at build 16, you're at release. But that was an arbitrary thing that the public said. Red, you know, release the camera, and it just rolled. So now they are being more explicit about whether the camera is released or not.
Yeah.
But there is some interesting stuff in the interview, including Ted's opinion on, you know, the quality of the sensors going into Epic X and the second and third tier Epic X's and Final Epic. So let's if we can, with your permission, Jace, we'll yes. cross to that interview now because it is quite long and it goes through a lot of stuff. And we work our way through what it is to be an Epic camera in terms of comparison to the Red One and stuff. And then this 4-stage deal with and then also just some stuff like the thing that I'm particularly excited about, which is the electronic mount for Canon and some of the other stuff.
Definitely. All right.
So, Ted, thanks for joining us.
Sure, my pleasure.
And I hope you're feeling better now, having starting to come back to work.
I am. I guess it's somewhat public knowledge or semi-public knowledge that I had a little heart thing that I had to deal with that required some surgery. It always sounds much more dramatic than it actually is when you're talking about heart stuff, but it was just a repair that they needed to do, and the recovery takes a while, but... I should be back in action in less than a month, and all is well, and I can certainly talk and type on my computer, so other than traveling around the world that I normally do, everything's been about the same.
Well, I join a long queue of people wishing you best wishes for a full and complete recovery.
Thank you.
So you stopped a few other people's hearts this morning with another round, afternoon. With another round of announcements, which I think is fair to say, while substantive and in very comprehensive in many respects, is really a continuation rather than a crossing across the direction that had been set up last time we spoke.
Yeah, it's just more details and a little more insight as to what we're thinking and how this program is going to lay out and some of the, I guess you'd say, philosophical alterations on the first time and the first time through the gauntlet with the Red One in the early days of when everybody was effectively a beta tester that took delivery of these cameras. This time around, it's a bit more selective. We don't really think that everybody needs to be or is going to want to be in that mode again. There will be a select few of which you are likely one, Mike, because of your low serial number and your real deep understanding of what it takes to be a valid beta tester and live through both the up and the down of that. But, you know, overall, that'll be a select group of people that will live through this first stage of taking delivery of early Epics, and that will benefit then everybody on the later stages, 2, 3, and 4. So less people will put up with some of the drama of early cameras.
Yeah, I mean, basically what you're doing now is you're sort of almost articulating explicitly what was an implicit comment last time, which is if you want a beta test, it's beta, and if you don't want a beta test, then that's no problem at all. We'll look after you, you just won't be in the beta test group.
Right, yeah, we never were trying to force anybody's hand. We were just positioning the camera as, this is where the camera sits today when we talk about the Red One in the early days, say the first, you know, 3 to 6 months of its life. And you're free to wait until the camera is at a more evolved state, or you're free to take it now, and with the understanding that some things are working in accord and very stable and viable, and the bulk of the camera function is viable and stable, but there are certainly things that will be changing, and there will be bugs, and there will be enhancements that you'll have to live with. In this case, all the same rules apply. It's just it will be a more a smaller, more selective, and actually probably a more intense group. It'll actually be easier for us to manage that process and get and derive really valid, good data very quickly out of that So we think this is a slightly better plan.
Yeah, and also, of course, from Red's point of view, you actually, and we know this, we've discussed this off air, that you need more feedback than it doesn't work and or I lost a file. You need, you know, the log files and the version that you're on and the conditions that it was under and whether there are reproducible steps for it. And all of that does take time, which you may not want to do in a production.
Right. Yeah, you know this probably better than almost anybody in the world, that this is not just a simple send an email every now and again. This is a real significant relationship to the point of really being part of the extended development and the extended engineering understanding team. So there's a lot of back and forth information that is tracking. There's a certain sense of responsibility of being able to track all the pertinent data that we need when problems do occur and when things are going really well. You know, we don't always need to know when there are issues. We also need to know when things are working the way they're supposed to, because then we're getting closer to the next stage of delivery. And there is a lot of kind of the non-sexy stuff, the boring stuff that people don't want to know, pulling log files and keeping good records on data and being able to be very forthcoming and not emotional about some of the scenarios that you may encounter when you're shooting with early stage cameras. All of that applies, and it's definitely a real back and forth relationship.
I mean,
I'm not telling you anything you don't know. You know the drill.
On Red 22, we literally did not let anyone else use it for, I think, almost 3 months, and not because we were being, we actually showed it to a lot of people, but people were like, can I take it on a job? And we were like, I just don't think it's a good idea yet, because in those very, very early days, you know, we didn't even have an EVF, and it just wasn't about making money. It was just about trying to work out how to make it work in a... So that's all good. But having said that, there are other advantages. I must admit, it's particularly nice to have the kind of access to the team that you get when working with someone in this situation, whether it's with Red or somebody else on a very close beta.
Yeah. Well, and there are certain personalities and working groups that really like this stuff, and certain groups and working personalities that are just not suited for this. And it's pretty clear to us as we've worked with different groups who really fits and who works with our groups very well and has really comfortable back and forth communication and who just doesn't. And that's sort of the human nature part of it. So we've discovered along the way how to make that work best, and that's why we sort of need to you know, control this group a little bit so we can decide, as for lack of a better way to describe it, who's really going to fit best in this world. So there won't be a bunch of these cameras. There'll be a small amount of these cameras.
Yeah, we're talking to you literally within minutes of the announcement going up. So we should point out that if Ted says something that is slightly not correct, the guaranteed place for the information is going to be posted on the website. And
correct. And yeah, and even that being said, a lot of the people that track the Red World understand this concept of everything is subject to change. So this is a very, very good example of this. There's a tremendous amount of information that all came out at once. The overall concepts are pretty easy to understand, and we group them in a way that you can do a cursory reading and you go, oh, I get it. I fit into this one. And then when you drill down a little further, you kind of get all of the information. But just so everybody knows, and we reiterate it, all of this stuff, even the big concepts down to the minutia, are indeed subject to change and can pretty much guarantee a lot of this will change as we hone in on the targets. So.
And so a good example of that is the initial sort of October posting didn't include the Scarlett S35 model, and that was actually just a typo, effectively.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, Ted, today seems to be pretty much an epic-focused sort of detail day, and am I right in thinking that we'll have a similar kind of sense of more fine detail on Scarlett as of November 30th?
Right. That's what's been announced, is that we put a lot of detail into the Epic lineup and when these first Epic cameras are targeted to hit and how we're going to roll them out in these various programs. Scarlett has been defined as, we'll give you more information on that program in a month from now, give or take.
Okay.
So that... that way, it actually, because there's just so much information to digest just on the Epic, which will be coming first, it's kind of better to focus on that for now, and then we'll move to Scarlett when it's appropriate.
So let's just, in broad terms, without going into point-by-point detail, outline the four stages of Epic rollout. And so we've discussed the stuff from a, you know, psychological point of view of whether you want to commit to one of these projects. But just from in terms of details, stage one is this idea that I don't give you back my red one. I get to keep it, but I actually pay a bit more. But by the same token, you throw in a bunch of goodies to kind of soften the blow. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. There are definitely some pricing differences in the programs. They, like we said before, they kind of fit with different use customers. Typically, the people that are going to move into these early epics, these stage one epics, have been people that are regularly working with their red ones. They're doing well in the profit zone mode. Have done, you know, very well economically with their red ones, and these kind of prices are less of a consideration and a concern than having the product, working the product, and getting the product out into the world. So that being said, it still is a pretty good deal because even though the stage one price is $28,000 and you're keeping your red one, so you're not getting that discount off the red one, it's a pretty robust package that you're getting for that 28 grand, whereas someone that does not own a red one, you know, aside from the fact that they won't be getting an epic for a little while, they'll only be getting that epic body, the brain, for that $28,000. So it's still a pretty compelling deal when you wrap it all together with the early adopter program.
Yeah, and just to give some rough idea on that, we are talking about like about $10,000 worth of stuff. I was going to say, it's like things like the BOM EVF and the LCD and the CF card reader and the batteries, the sort of things that you would need to get working. So the good news is that the $28,000 isn't just the tip of the iceberg. You wouldn't be in $28,000 plus another, you know, $15,000 worth of things just to even switch it on.
Yeah, this will be a working system. Other than optics, this will be a working system for that price point. And there's actually a list on the posting that has some price breakdown of what those modules are expected to cost. So you can kind of do your own math and realize that it's a pretty good deal, even at this $28,000 price point, while you're keeping your red one.
The other thing about the $28,000 stage one group is that, apart from the fact you get Jim's cell phone number, which I laughed at. Actually, I have one of Jim's hardcore metal business cards.
The metal cards, yeah.
Yeah, but thank you. That's kind of you to offer that. Other thing that's more significant is the idea that you could upgrade the red one that you're keeping for a Mysterium X chip for $4,500. Now, I've heard no mention of when those upgrades may happen, though you have indicated that I would have priority if I was in group one, for example.
Right. So that's still in the engineering mode, so we haven't announced any hard dates on when that will happen. But you can consider it relatively near term. That's also a pretty good scenario that you'll be able to upgrade your red ones in advance of everyone else that wants to and have these new sensors inside the red one that if you've been tracking some of the comments about the David Fincher movie that they've been shooting with these early test versions of this, the DPs are very, very pleased with the sensitivity and the quality of the images that they're getting. So that's kind of the side bonus, I guess you'd say, of being one of these early stage one customers, is that you have the opportunity to move into that new camera sensor, the new Mysterium X sensor in your Red One body before anybody else does.
But let me ask you this, just on a kind of a hardcore sort of philosophical point of view. If you had both of those sitting there on the desk, one is an S35 Mysterium X Epic and one is a Mysterium X Red One, are they going to look better out of one than the other? I mean, is it literally like the same sensor and it's different packaging, or do we expect the Epic to...
Well, the Epic system is obviously a much more advanced and more evolved system. So the entire system and how it works and the resolutions that we're driving out of it, you know, larger than the 4.5K that we can do on the Red One, and the quicker startup time, the smaller body function, and the higher speed, the higher frame rates at the full sensor size are going to make the difference. There'll be more capabilities with the Epic, but the Red One, considering all that it can do to give it an even better picture than it has now, and it's certainly, you know, as you know, because you shoot it all over the world, a pretty amazing picture in its first iteration. To increase the quality of that and increase the sensitivity for some of the low light shooting that a lot of people really like to do, it's becoming quite in vogue now to shoot with very little lighting and rate the camera in you know 500, 640, 800 ASA range to get an even cleaner image than you get now when, with the Red One. There's really no weak point in either of these products. It's just one will have much more advanced capabilities, that's the Epic as a second generation product, and one will have the Red One's capabilities with a higher sensitivity and even cleaner picture than the Red One.
So before we go on to discussing those other stages, let's just clarify a little bit of that, because you have also, or Jim has also posted some details on the Epic X. So am I right in thinking that if I put down the various things that have been discussed about better frame rate and everything else, there's sort of three components to this. One of them is the chip itself is going to give you a different light response. That's going to directly affect my ISO. But it's actually the camera back that's going to affect my frame rate, because it's whether or not it can handle the data. So, for example, Redcode 250, I wouldn't expect that to work on a Red 1 because the rest of the electronics aren't Epic level, whereas I would expect to... Is that right?
That is absolutely correct, yes. So the sensor will upgrade in the Red 1, but the system will remain as the Red 1. So you will have benefits of the new sensor, but not the all the Epic benefits come in the new Epic body. That's correct.
Okay, and then the third thing that makes a difference is how the camera kind of handles things. And I'm alluding now to the new five-axis adjustable sensor plate, the fact that it's got GPS, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff that we never had in the Red One in the first place, so we'd hardly expect it to suddenly appear. Right. Tell me what that five-axis adjustable sensor plate is, by the way, for those that don't understand it.
So that allows a very precise granular adjustment of the... Of where the sensor needs to live in relationship to the lens and all of the other pieces inside that optical block that makes the picture as high resolution and locked in as possible. One of the things that people have discovered with the Red One that they really never even had a chance to discover with HD cameras is that the tolerances of making sure things are really in absolute tack sharp focus and you're really maximizing the resolution, relate to everything being aligned properly, right? And the cameras being tuned properly, as it were. So one of the things that we talk about a lot when we talk about the back focus adjustment in the Red One is that it's there, it's convenient to use, it's much more evolved than putting shims into a lens mount, but it's not designed to be adjusted 20 times a day in the field. It's designed to be measured and checked properly so that you know that your mount and where the sensor is living in relation to the back element of the lens that you're using is in very precise set, right? So that you're getting a proper focused image when you're shooting it, which is a little different than broadcast cameras where the DP or the camera operator will sometimes just monkey around with the little knurled knob on the B4 lens two or three times or more a day to check and set his back focus. It's much more precise when you're talking about a much bigger sensor with much higher resolution. So in this case, like everything else with the Red One, we work to evolve the ability to lock these things in, and that's what that refers to.
So there are obviously a bunch of things we're not going to have time to talk about today that the Epic also gives you. I already alluded to the GPS, but there's going to be higher monitor support and more control on the monitor supports. But one of the big things that the Epic body would give me over a Red One is, I believe, focus tracking. And, of course, that's relationship to, say, Canon or Nikon electronic mounts. None of that would appear on a Red One.
Right. Well, yeah, because you don't have the manual Cine Glass on the Red One, and none of that electronics lives in the Red One. It's really more designed just like a film camera would work with manual focus. So that's an advanced feature that will live in the Epic to be able to track on focus and do some pretty advanced focus tracking. What's really happening in the world of cinematography and stills is that, you know, we're seeing this blending of the technologies and things that no one would have ever really thought about in the cinema world of how do you check and work focus. But you know, the idea of doing what I like to call tap-tap focus on a digital still camera, where you're checking zones and you're seeing what you want to hold on focus, and then you're tracking accordingly. A lot of that stuff wants to be brought into the cinema world, but there really wasn't a proper entree. Well, now there is, because the Epic is literally a dual-purpose camera. It's motion and still purpose-built for both. So we can take a lot of the things that were wants and needs of the still photographer and start bringing them in to the motion world. You know, it's, I guess it's sort of akin to what happened in the cinema world, where guys were adapting laser rangefinders that then, of course, that became an actual cinema product that lives on a lot of cameras, the CineTape device that will shoot a laser out for longer focus things where they can't easily tape. So that's just bringing technology from a different field and applying it into cinema. But, of course, it's a third-party accessory. We're bringing a lot of that stuff into the system. And this is just the beginning, right? So as we start to evolve it, just like we did with the Red One, we're, 21 evolutions in on the Red One camera over a two-year period, the same thing is going to happen with Epic, where we'll learn from our customer base. That's going to broaden quite a bit now that we're talking both stills and motion, designed for that. And as you well know, because you spent the time with Greg Williams and those guys doing that kind of work, it's already happened quite a bit with the Red One, which wasn't really ever designed to do that kind of work. But of course, because of the size of the sensor and the kind of images, we're seeing lots of still and motion work with the Red One. Now we're building a product and delivering a product that will really, that's really designed to do that. So the gates are off, as we say.
So if that's sort of an obvious thing, you could maybe look at the specs and guess on a couple of these things, you know, clearly that has to be an Epic-only feature. One of the ones that isn't perhaps so clear is the FLUT or floating LUT color science stuff. Is mm-hmm. that stuff that yep. is going to be Red One inheritable, or is that going to be Epic-only?
I don't know if I can actually give you all the details on that yet, because it's still just in its early stages of announcement. It's Epic Scarlet designed, and I think we'll have to defer the answer to a little longer on what can be moved in to the Red One via software firmware on that new dynamic range work that the science team is working on. So we'll have to wait on that a bit. I apologize for not being able to give you all the details That's on right. that just yet, if that can fit into the Red One world. But I'm not ruling it out, let's put it that way.
So from my point of view, the huge number that doesn't maybe get as much headline, but I find it to be fascinating, is the fact that Redcode hits 250, because this mm-hmm. this is not just a minor jump. This is a vast increase in bandwidth through the backplane of the camera's computing technology. Is that something that you've been excited to see happen? Because that really is opening the camera up.
Very much so, yeah. And it we should just take a little care to make sure that we don't make a direct data extrapolation from where we sit with Redcode. Well, now we have the three flavors in the Red One, 28, 36, 42, into these higher numbers, because as the Redcode becomes more advanced and the system becomes more advanced, this number of what we can do and how we can achieve these kind of data rates and what we're going to do with them is not just specifically related to data rate, just so you know. It's a more complex matrix of math, as it were, that allows us to get there.
But it's the red code that's going to allow us to shoot 60 frames scaled from the full frame down to 1080p.
Exactly, among other things. Yeah. Right. So it's actually quite flexible. But you know, we've had a little bit of back and forth, and this is kind of one of these interesting points that's always interesting and fun to discuss. And you've lived it too, because you've done a lot of visual effects work on these TV series and things that you've worked on with the Red. At the compression rates that the Red One hits, some of the traditional visual effects guys were a little leery of that. They're thinking, well, that might be just a little too much compression, but they're not really thinking about it in what our compression means versus, say, an MPEG-4 style compression of the older sort of HD-type technology, because we use wavelet technology to create Red Code. And you can speak to this, that and there's many other projects that can speak to it too, commercials that shoot in blue screen and green screen all day long, that are amazingly pleased with the results that they're getting at Redcode, say 36, when they're shooting green screen, when they would expect to need a much milder compression ratio to achieve those quality numbers. They're already there with the Red 1, and we're just going to make it better when we move into this next generation of Red codes.
I mean, I just don't see it as a green screen problem. We, you know, shot in England on green screen, tons of green screen, and the film compositors from Hollywood that were on the team reckoned it was some of the best green screen they'd ever seen. And I don't see the Red code now as being a factor that we're hanging out for green screen. I think that's mm-hmm. a box that's already been ticked. But I do love the idea that, for example, you could be shooting at higher frame rates and maybe only
exactly.
output 1080p, but not binning or skipping to get there, but actually going from a scaled down full frame. That's an awesome
yep,
advance.
Exactly.
Before we go back to just finishing out the stages, I just wanted to touch on the ISO, which is 200 to 8,000. I'm wondering, there was a joking post about 800 is the new 320, but have you actually announced where you're rating the camera? Because that comment, well, 800 being the new 320, implies like 1.5 stops.
I don't think we are at the stage yet where we can make a hard announcement on what the Epic sensor through the system and through everything that works through is going to be rated at. A lot of that's got to go through test, and a lot of that's going to be proven out in the real world, right? Because the 320 rating we get on the Red 1 is our very comfortable rating, is based on a lot of real world dynamics of what you really rate this camera at, with an understanding of where you need to protect the high end and how far down into the midtones and the shadows and the dark areas of the picture you can go if you know what you're doing with this camera. So we certainly know that the Mysterium X sensor is going to bring us much more sensitivity. Will we comfortably rate it at 500 or 640 as the baseline rating is yet to be determined. But I think we can safely say that 500 is a good sort of starting point to where it'll likely move from there once we get through all these stages of engineering that we're at now. So I think people can just be looking forward and anticipating a much more sensitive device is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, because the feeling, I guess, the sort of the mood of the crowd in the Colosseum is interest in ISO and noise over necessarily going for, you know, higher and higher resolutions. And we love your higher resolutions, mm-hmm. but I'm not hearing the clamor for 27K like I am the clamor for higher ISO.
Right. Yeah, in the real world, it's all about real-world shooting conditions and what people need. And of course, we've been able to prove, and a lot of very high-end DPs have been able to prove, that you can use the Red 1 extraordinarily effectively in very low light conditions. You just have to know what you're doing. You have to really, just like you have to know if you're a qualified professional DP, you have to know your film stock and you have to know your tools. The same thing applies with the Red, where I've seen the Red 1 rated much, much higher than ASA 320 with remarkable results. You know, with an understanding that you're working highlights and you're working shadows and you're creating a look and a mood and a style with those images, just like you would be with film, right, that you would rate and push in different ways. The new sensor is just going to give us even more flexibility, and I'm very comfortable to say that, you know, we're going to find a full stop or more at this stage of the game, and it may be significantly more once we're done with all the work.
So let's go back to rounding out. Now we've defined the differences between One and Epic X, define those rollouts, because the rollouts really take us up to the S35 Epic, no longer the X version. So the initial cameras have this tattoo tagline, I guess.
Yeah, but that's our nomenclature for it. Mm-hmm.
It's not your expectation that these are sort of prototypes that wouldn't be able to use in production once you get to production builds and releases, right? These cameras should be, these aren't going to be like leper cameras. Whatever you do, don't use one of the tattoos because they were stuck together with glue and sticky tape. They're meant to actually be able to work.
Not at all. These are really going to be similar to the early stage Red 1. So for those of let's say that, you know, the first 50 customers, the first 50 guys that hung out with us in that red tent back in 2006, have a very deep and full understanding of the cameras that they took back then, when, you know, let's, you know, use Mark Peterson as an example, taking 6 and 7, or my buddy Dino from California taking number 31. They lived it, and made it work, and everyone had a different comfort zone of when they were ready to get these things out on jobs and how they would work with their clients to say, just so you know, this camera just came out a couple weeks ago. It does amazing things. We've done some testing. We know where its stability range is, and we're going to feel pretty comfortable. But just be aware that this is the first time, you know, it's out in the world, so we just need to kind of watch and take some care with it. But these will definitely have a functionality. They don't need to sit in a lab, let's put it that way.
Okay.
They don't need to sit inside an office, yeah. And the only thing you can do with it is turn it off and on and shoot a chart. We fully expect you to shoot real things with these cameras. But, you know, if you're doing work that is expected to be used in somewhere, you'll have to sort of prepare your clients that these devices are early stage and we need to just kind of treat them as expected. It's another kind of reason to understand why there's a value to keeping your Red 1 and that these Stage 1 customers are not trade-in customers for their Red 1, because you're going to want that Red 1 around, you know, in the event of a water landing, as we say. you're going to want that Red 1 close by. So I think that's just smart business for you know, the first couple of cameras that hit the line.
Yeah. So you're not giving out exact numbers, and you're subject to approval on who gets in that program. But are we talking tens of cameras, hundreds of cameras, or thousands of cameras?
I can tell you it won't be thousands. What we've talked about is it'll be enough to get a valid testing program and testing matrix in. So it'll be a relatively small number of cameras. I don't really want to pin us down to is it bigger than a breadbasket or smaller than a breadbasket kind of dynamic, but between I don't want to commit is what I'm saying, because sure, there's a lot of dynamics that have to go into the next little phase of how many of these cameras are we going to deliver and how is this program going to really prove itself out in the real world. Let's just say for right now it's a fairly small group of people.
Okay.
And let everybody kind of extrapolate accordingly.
So let's assume you're not in that small group of people.
I know that's a very Clinton, it's a very Bill Clinton-like answer, but I've got to sort of protect both sides of the equation here.
So let's assume that I'm not in that small group. Let's assume that I'm just sort of Joe Public and I have a Red 1 and I don't expect that I'm going to be on a, you know, speed dial. So my first option to consider when I move past that beta group is whether I want to be in Stage 2 or Stage 3. I already have my Red 1. And Stage 2, what's the big differences between Stage 2 and Stage 3? Assuming I'm a Red 1 owner but not on speed dial.
Right. So Stage 2 is, you know, obviously Stage 2 from Stage 1. So Stage 1 is this critical mass period where we're going to learn a lot, we're going to transfer a lot of knowledge back and forth, and we're going to essentially prep for Stage 2. You guys are, all of the people that move into Stage 2 are riding on the backs of what you guys have learned with us, this smaller group has learned with us. So the basic concept of Stage 2 is you buy this Epic X, the S35, the 5K Epic X. This is a production model camera now, and you're keeping your Red 1, right? So this is designed for the owners in a larger group that want to keep their Red 1. They have a lot of value with their Red 1. I've talked to customers all around the world over the past, well, however long it's been since we made the initial announcements about Epic, of their business dynamics and how much these Red 1s are working in many cases every single day of these people's lives. And they're a little, panicked is not the right word, but they're definitely putting a lot of cycles into how are they going to make this upgrade move and trade in their Red 1, because it's actually working all the time. And even if the rental rates move a little bit when the Epics come out, this is a secondary camera that fits into the indie film market. And for someone that, let's say, can't afford the full-blown Epic, now they have a secondary choice to still be shooting with a Red, right? So that's value. It has a lot of value in that respect, both from a business side and I don't want to give up my camera. I've lived it. I've loved it. It's part of my life now, I'm happy to keep it. So that's kind of where those fit. These are the customers that essentially will be adding to their arsenal with an Epic, as opposed to trading in their Red 1 for an Epic, if you know what I'm saying.
But even though I don't trade in,
mm-hmm.
you still,
yeah, there's still some value there.
Give, well, you still give me a discount of $8,500. I'm not quite sure why, but
yeah,
thanks very
why
much.
Why not?
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I still get some stuff.
Yes, and I've said quite a bit, so this is a sort of a regular comment of mine, that we really put a lot of stock and faith in and a lot of value in this early customer base, right? So this is obviously a much bigger group now, but these are the people that have made Red successful as a company, the ones that took a risk on us, the ones that believed in us and believed in a camera company that had not made a camera before, and they deserve to get something back because of that faith and that belief in us. So it's pretty well known that Red does things very differently in terms of where we spend our marketing dollars and our advertising dollars. We don't do any paid advertising. We like to put a lot of resources back into our customer base.
But this is a pretty sweet deal because Stage 2, I should be giving you $28,000. I give you actually $19,500.
You give me $20,000, right? $19,000.
Yeah. Yep. But then I get a bunch of kit that's got to be worth at least another $7,000, maybe $8,000, which mm-hmm. includes things like not exactly the same as the Stage 1 group. You don't get the bomb EVF and stuff.
A little different.
But it's still got to be worth.
You get the LCD. You get the remote, so you can control the camera wirelessly. You get the compact flash module. You get an I/O module. You get the batteries. It's a working system, you know, and then you'll upgrade if you want to, you know, for another $3,000 or what is it, $3,200, you'll get the bomb EVF. So you have that small high-res EVF to mount on there.
So just one quick question on that. If I went for the Stage 2, which obviously, for example, has slightly different things, as will, let me give you one example. It has the base I/O module, not the pro I/O module. If I buy in at Stage 2, can I pay the difference to get the pro module, or do I have to buy a pro module?
You know, we haven't sort of announced all those nuances yet, but it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility that we can figure that out on a case-by-case basis. This is the package as it stands today on day one of the information release. So we haven't kind of run the dynamics on the what-if scenarios. What if this customer wants this instead of this? They would prefer an EVF over the LCD. They would prefer this and that. A lot of it's based on allocation of the manufacturing and how we do this. So that's why you kind of put together a package that, you know, this is the package that will go out that we expect most customers will be happy with in that zone. And then if there's alterations, then we'll have to consider that. But that'll come later. That'll come much closer to when these cameras are ready to ship. And
but
that's
this is
part
actually,
of that whole subject.
This is actually a better deal than the Red 1, because if you think about it, I get to keep my Red 1, I get for $19,500 what I had to spend more than $17,500 for last time, because last time I just got the camera body and I had to buy all the bits.
Stuff, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a typical Red 1 package, even at, you know, very base Red 1, usable but base, was easily over $25,000 US. You know, probably closer to $30,000 US by the time you tricked it out the way you needed to shoot it with. And then you added some other pieces of kit that were specialized to your workflow and the lenses and whatnot. And so, yes, you're right. This is actually more gear for less money, which is pretty good.
Excluding glass, which let's assume I already have, mm-hmm. I basically get a whole extra effectively – well, I'm going to be stupid now and say I wouldn't buy a Red 1 as my second camera because I would buy this as my – second camera, it becomes my first camera, and I get all the other bits and pieces that I'd have to pay for. So this is like a killer deal.
At some point, it just won't make sense to buy a Red 1 anymore. You'll be buying one of these.
Okay. And then Stage 3 is the same kind of approach, except for now what you're saying is, hey, as much as I like the Red 1, I don't think I need it anymore, so here, please have it back, and I'm only going to pay you $10,500. So it's similar to 2, right?
Right. So this is what we've announced. So this is the piece of information that's been out in the public eye for the longest. $28,000 less $17,500. But also to understand, you're getting that deal, right? You're getting the stuff. So in this case, you get the smaller LCD, the 2.8-inch LCD. You're getting the modules. You get the I/O module. You get the CF module, the batteries, the Red Note, etc. And it's only costing you sub $11,000. To own it because you're trading in your Red 1. So this is for a different customer that has been successful with their Red 1 but doesn't need an arsenal of equipment. They need one camera, and this is the right configuration, the right deal for them.
Yeah, and throwing in all that extra stuff may not seem like much. It's not as sexy as the Epic, but I mean, it's another at least $5,000 or $6,000 worth of stuff.
It's real value.
Yeah, real value there. Okay, and then that's stage 1, 2, and 3. 1 being beta, 2 being I don't trade in, 3 I do trade in, and then we have everybody else, which starts at a non-X version. And again, the only difference between the X and the non-X from a production model point of view is what?
Well, the red code number is designed to be different, although that could change. I guess the best way to describe it is the Epic X customers are getting the pick of the litter on the sensors. Not to say that the regular S35 sensors will be bad or less evolved or problematic, but as you go through this whole process, the X customer is getting what we believe is the best of breed across the board. So that's part of it. And then, of course, the biggest difference is that for the $28,000 for a new customer, while it's still a very good deal based on, you know, looking at the market at large and what cameras that can't do nearly what this can do cost in the HD realm and can't get anywhere beyond HD, this is for the brain only, for the red body, the Epic body only at $28,000, and then you're going to add another, let's say, $8,000 to $10,000 in accessories to make it a shooting kit. So it's a really good deal if you bought a Red One. As we've said all along, we focused on our existing customers and we wanted to make sure that they were rewarded. So regardless of what stage you dive into this game, 1, 2, 3, or 4, depending on what type of customer you are, there's a good fit for you. And there's real value for you. It's not just, oh, well, it's kind of, you know, marketing thing, and it's value, but it's not really enough to make a difference. It's definitely enough to make a difference. This is real money that you don't have to shell out to get what the next generation of customers that are just moving in that don't own a Red One will actually be paying, you know, significantly more to move into this new technology.
Yeah, so this is basically giving us a game plan on Epic that I can financially plan for I'm thinking the next 6 months, maybe 4 or 5 months, sort of roughly speaking. And then we'll get a similar bite of the cherry with Scarlett. So obviously a lot of questions over Scarlett, but we don't have any negative news on Scarlett. As we said before, that was just a typo missing the S35 sensor, and that'll happen November 30th.
Right, we'll give you more information like that.
Mm-hmm. And so everything else outside that, just to sort of put the rumors to bed, there is no other surprises. All the other products that have been announced up until now are, in fact, still in the pipeline. It's just, you know, the order in which we're talking about them, correct?
That's correct.
So,
yes.
So when you and I spoke last in Red Hat office, you were expecting that the outer end of the Epic Scarlett rollout would be about a year after the initial rollout. And does that sort of roughly feel like where you're at?
Yeah, that still holds true. It's probably a little less than a year based on optimistic, everything going as planned scenarios, so that we'll get to the full frame. We'll get to the large format 645 stuff and 617 stuff in one more cycle of engineering. So give or take a year is a comfortable, easy number to think about, is that stuff's about a year away.
Just to sort of round out the conversation, because it's just a personal interest to me, we've touched on the electronic red mount, the Nikon red mount, and the Canon red mount, but actually I just want to give it a little bit of attention because I think it's really important. We're talking for a Nikon or Canon mount, $500, and that will basically be an interchangeable mount instead of the PL mount that will actually allow me to use a Canon lens with electronic focus. Can you just discuss that and clarify what's...
Yeah, absolutely. So for those people that shoot digital SLRs, they know that these new technology lenses have internal controls for focus and iris. And there's a pinout configuration of electronic pins on the back of that lens that need to be attached to some pin-ins on the camera to make that electrical connection and control it. So we'll be able to have a Nikon version and a Canon version, and then as we build into it, a red version that will have the red electronic mount. But we'll be able to use the functionality of these existing lenses. So let's say you're in still mode on an Epic and you want to do this, like I call it, tap-tap focus and control iris that way remotely and get into those electronics of the lens, you'll have that capability. That's part of what we're doing. So it makes it a little more universally used. A little, you know, there's a lot of these lenses out there. They're very popular. In some cases, they're exceptional quality and can actually even be used for cinema case as long as you know how to cherry pick the right ones. So there's high functionality, and there's no reason that these customers shouldn't be able to take advantage of that.
So let me, you know, if I can, Your Honor, treat the witness as hostile.
Yes.
So you guys have benefited enormously in things like that from Canon and Nikon publishing and being open with their specs. You wouldn't be able to support a Canon or Nikon lens if they were proprietary and wouldn't let you know what the pinouts were and wouldn't let you work with them. Now, obviously, they do that for other companies. How is Red's position moving forward? Are you going to be, for example, your floating LUT stuff, is that going to be an open or closed standard? Are you going to publish the Red lens electronics sort of information for other people? I mean,
so you'll have to allow me some time to evolve into the right answer for that. This is, you know, the best way to handle this kind of how do we compare to other companies in terms of how open, how closed. I think a lot of people have a very good understanding of Red being very transparent with their philosophy and how we move our products forward. A lot of this stuff will time will tell. The real truth of it is that we haven't had time to focus because of, you know, what our engineers are doing is working on getting this next generation of product out the door. So there hasn't been a cycle to look at how do we sort of open up less or more, what strategically do we want to do with some of this IP that we're working with, because our hands are completely full delivering the products. Right.
Well, but that's I got to call you on that because you would have less on your hands if you let some other people do some stuff, right? I mean, for example, we'd all love to be able to cut down an R3D file and have just like half an R3D file to send to somebody, because an R3D is naturally quite large and sometimes out of a continuous take, which tend to run for a long time. We only want a little bit. I don't have a problem with Red's open transparency when it comes to discussing your plans, discussing your pricing, and discussing your market position. But, you know, it took a while for the SDKs to come out, and we all benefited when they did. But you didn't have to develop that software after you'd done the SDK. There's a leg up, I understand, in trying to get opening up some standards. But once they're open, the rest of the industry can really help you a lot.
Yeah, but that's only one side of the argument, because it's a completely double-edged sword in the fact that when you build and create these pieces that a lot of industry will be touching and using, it requires a lot of resources. There's a tremendous amount behind the scenes that people don't see, and they kind of think, oh, well, the SDK's out, and it just kind of works, and there's no back and forth that goes on. That's not the case at all. There's a tremendous amount of resources required to make sure that these things are working and continuing to work and perform at the level that customers need. So it's not, you know, you hear this from the big computer software companies like Apple and Adobe and Discrete and Quantel, et cetera, that it's not as simple as it sounds, and there's a big multi-tiered tree. Every time you release something into the wild, you need a groundskeeper, as it were, that has to kind of cut and trim this stuff all the time and make sure it's not just a wild bush.
Okay, well, just hire a groundskeeper.
You know what I'm saying?
But just hire one. I mean, you know, you've got lots of employees.
That's the other thing, and that's actually a good point. Is how does Red continue to grow as a company and service its customers while being very careful? You know, growth is a very tricky thing. Success, interestingly enough, is a very tricky thing. A lot of people, I think, will understand this statement. Some may scratch their head, but it's much easier to fail at something than to succeed at something. Do you get my meaning when I say that?
Oh, look, I totally understand what you're saying, but you know, Jim knows that Scarlett, in particular, is broadening your market enormously. So you know, as well as before anybody else knew it, that you're going to have to gear for that. But then, hey, you know, I believe Jim has a bit of experience in consumer products and wide audiences and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's not, I mean, to say, well, we need a gatekeeper, you aren't a little company underfunded that is struggling just to get its first camera out anymore. You are now a successful company.
That's true.
So isn't there a responsibility to put back into the industry for these standards?
Well, and that's my point. That's exactly my point, is that we are not, you know, two guys in the back of the room anymore. We're not 15 guys in the back of the room anymore. We sold thousands of cameras. They need to be supported. They need to be properly cared for, as it were, right? And we continue always to add resources. But trust me, it's not as easy as you might think to find the right resources. It's much easier to hire the wrong person than it is to hire the right person. And the culture of Red and the success points of Red is really critical. So when you just sort of say, let's try and grow it faster, that's the quickest way to fail as a company, in my opinion, is to allow it to explode beyond anybody's control because you've got a popular product.
But the argument is spurious if you say that the only option between being a closed standard organization is to grow out of control. Because there is a midpoint, which is the point where you publish standards and allow the rest of the industry to not take your lunch and eat it, but just to help and expand and build in. And I don't want to go on about it, but I just think that there is less published open stuff from some of the technical side of Red than there is from the marketing, sales, and general vision of where we're going kind of stuff. Red is not an open source company. I don't say that it should be, but it's, you know, it just isn't as often publishing stuff.
I don't disagree with your statements. And this is a good debate to have. It's interesting and it helps evolve. And every time you talk about something, you think about it a little more and you make decisions accordingly. So this is not something we're not thinking about all the time and discussing all the time. And as you've stated and proven, there have been steps to make things more viable for multiple companies other than just the first two that we worked with. And that takes a lot of time and energy and you got to do it right. All I'm saying is that you got to do it right. And if you watch how we're trending and how we're focusing, I think we're focusing on the right things, where we're putting our energy into the right things right now. You just simply can't answer to every single piece of the puzzle as much as you might want to. It's just not realistic. So you just got to kind of know where your limitations are as a company and where to put your energy is all I'm saying. And the energy's got to be first and foremost to our customer base, to the customers that own these cameras and are working with these cameras. I'll give you an example from my standpoint. It's not always a non-frustrating road when you're involved in both the development side and the kind of public outreach side like I am. There are partners that we work with on the software side, and we would like things to happen faster. And if you look at what Red has done so quickly in so many ways in terms of releasing products like the Red Rocket, the Red One camera, all the accessories, upgraded accessories, going from the 5-inch LCD to the 7-inch LCD, you know, I mean, I can give you lots and lots of examples, moving from the 8-gig card to the 16-gig card and getting the Red RAM working and all these things that take a lot of cycles. There's an outward frustration, and I don't mind being public about it, saying we would like some of the companies that we work with on a regular basis to try and help us turn things out a little faster. But they push back on us saying that's a little too kind of radical for us. It's a little unrefined yet. It's not kind of where we need it to be. We need to be behind closed doors for much, much longer than you are before we're willing to release a product into the world. So therefore, there are some things that we would like to see in terms of supporting some of our hardware, using the Red Rocket as an example, that haven't really happened yet to the point that we would like them to happen. So this is kind of an open call. There's more success out there that hasn't really been cultivated, right? So now I'm kind of taking your side of the equation. It's frustrating for me that in some cases, some of the partners that we work with can't be on the same train as we are, can't ride the same ride as we do. But you also have to understand they have other business interests. They have other things that they're doing. They have other priorities as well. So you have to gauge your frustration. And we do.
Well, I don't want to finish.
I don't know if that helped or hurt.
No, it's fine. I hope that in time it will become a thing that, you know, you can release specs for the new electronic lenses, the floating point LUTs, mm-hmm. the other stuff, because as I say, I think it's something that would allow the industry to help users use RED products. But enough said.
Yeah.
So yeah. Obviously I've taken up an enormous amount of your time. I really do appreciate you taking this time to walk through everything so meticulously with us. We do appreciate it very much, as always.
My pleasure.
And for the record, yes, you can tick the box that I would like to put my hand up for that initial program. We appreciate the offer.
Yeah, so I figured. I think I think certainly you are a candidate. So others can look to you as, am I a candidate? If you think and feel and work and figure things out in the Mike Seymour and friends style with your group over there, you're in pretty good company. So you're doing all the right things, in my opinion. So
well,
I appreciate
much.
It.
And we appreciate
continue to appreciate
that.
It. Thanks, sir.
Well, Mike, that was excellent, particularly the saucer of milk moment at the end. Very good.
The saucer of milk moment, sorry?
Well, sort of meow.
Oh.
You sort of tore into him a bit.
Well, I think it would be good for RED to be more open.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I understood in the early days, as I said in that thing to Ted, that, you know, yes, you've got limited resources, but hey, they've got enough resources now. Put some people on it.
Yeah. So hand-picked chips for the Epic Tattoo sounds really interesting. And having the whole Jim's personal cell phone and being on the A-list, Mike.
Being on the A-list, yeah. Is that the arsehole list? Hey, tell me this, Jace. The Epic X is going to be the unpainted aluminium look.
Right.
As a director, if I turned up with that camera and then somebody turned up with one that was all painted black and polished, would you be thinking that the first one looked like it was maybe a bit dodgy or not a, it was like a prototype or not a, I mean,
so
we're
saying
is it going to be a negative?
Yeah, so it's not really going to be this sort of two-tone look that we're used to seeing in the original renders. It's going to be a bit of more of a raw kind of rumbled kind of look, I guess.
In fact, today, Jared actually posted real photos of the camera.
Right.
It's hard to tell unless you read the fine print, but literally at above the real photos, he actually says real photo. And then he says renders. And so all the real photos are it in the tumbled aluminium, which is the look that the prototype was. Remember when we saw the prototypes of RED One in the early days and it was that sort of brushed aluminium look? That's what the thing's going to look like out of the gate.
I'll reserve judgment a bit until I sort of see one on set, which I'm sure, Mike, won't be very long.
Okay, but I guess my concern was I would hate to spend $28,000 on a camera and then have people go, actually, that was one of the early prototype ones.
Well, I think obviously the bars like the RED One, if you remember, obviously. I mean, you're a part of it, particularly here, that, you know, when REDs came out, and I remember when we sort of took them out to RED users when we had them on set, there was this incredible kind of sort of buzz, and it was almost like, you know, this sort of having a celebrity on set. It sounds silly, but it really was like that. I'm hoping that some of the early sort of gotchas that RED is kind of over now will not follow us through to you know, a new RED coming on set. Well, hopefully won't carry that same, the same mental issues, I guess. Does that make sense? I'm hoping that having this new looking camera on set, I mean, any, even if it was all black, it doesn't matter. It's going to be the new RED camera, the new RED camera. We've got the new RED camera today. There's always going to be that level of interest and possible, you know, trepidation, particularly from bloody clients and all that sort of stuff. I mean, literally, the last job I shot last week was on 35, and obviously I, you know, just usually suggested, look, RED, you know, I've got a lot of dialogue, why don't we just shoot RED, and then I can just keep rolling and all the usual reasons why I like RED or like digital. And they said, oh, look, it's a new client, we don't really want any issues, we don't want any problems. So there is still this kind of underlying kind of tension from mostly unwarranted from, you know, the high hegians and clients and agencies that they don't even really, sometimes if there's something a bit twitchy, new client and all that stuff, they just don't even really want to go there. So I'm hoping that, we'll sort of get over all of that sort of stuff and new epics will be welcomed and not sort of, what is this, a whole bunch of new problems? I think regardless of what color or flavor or whatever it looks like, I think there's always going to be that sort of interested trepidation, I guess. I don't think the look is the issue. You'll get that regardless for any new camera, I think.
Well, I hope so. Generally, I guess the thing is we're going to wait to November 30th. There will be a mild increase in the price of Scarlett. There are new features coming in that are directly affected by, I think, Canon's announcement. I think they've even said that out loud. And I honestly think that maybe the reason why today was Epic and Scarlett is 30th is that in light of the 1D and a few other things, they wanted to just take a moment to check their specs before they did it. But quite frankly... Absolutely. I'm very happy that they've got details. Yeah, I'm very happy they've got the details out there. If they'd announced today, shipping today, turn up in, as you said, down at the factory to pick it up, I'd have been pretty ticked as I wouldn't have been able to get over for it at such short notice. We will be discussing other things in upcoming episodes of Red Center, including the new floating LUT stuff once we get permission to talk about that. As you could tell in talking and listening to Ted, there were occasions where I was like literally hammering him on stuff and he was like, look, I don't even think we've got a policy on whether to discuss that yet. So once that's solved, we'll try and solve it for you. And hopefully this has helped demystify and somewhat wade through the stuff that was flying around on the Twitters and stuff today.
Absolutely. Look, and I think obviously we had to get this, we'll get this episode out really quick just to sort of cover off and get the word from the horse's mouth today out there for people. But I think obviously as with last announcements, there is that dust settling time. A lot of sort of things get sort of solidified and loose ends get tied up in the next sort of few days. So I think we'll get the next step out sort of sooner rather than later once some of that dust has settled and then a few more things leak out and maybe some of these things kind of simplify themselves down and get a bit sort of a bit clearer. One thing I thought was fantastic is obviously which would have been fantastic on our last couple of shoots together, Mike, is the Canon mounts, apart from the fact, and Nikon mounts, apart from the fact that they're going to be, you know, fully electronic and work with all the autofocus and electronic irises, but they're going to be $500. I think, you know,
so cool. $500 for an electronic mount, as you say, is just a really good deal. I mean, I guess maybe I just come from a professional background, but I mean, I've bloody been gang raped, bent over and violated by companies charging $600 for a bracket, right? An electronic mount for $500.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the R&D that's got to go into this, we've touched on it before, that it cannot be easy to get all the, you know, electronics and work out, you know, I guess, reverse engineer the Canon and Nikon electronics to make these mounts work. It's taken a lot of other companies that have done other mounts a lot longer and a lot more money to get these things out the door. So it's impressive. Obviously, that is a major part of the whole idea of like it or not, or buy it or not, the whole DSMC concept of making this a stills camera. There's no way you could have a Canon or a Nikon mount and not have, you know, electronic mounts. So it's great that that piece of the puzzle is there. At least it, you know, and obviously, as we now know, there's going to be flash sync and flash sockets and all these sort of stuff on the camera. So there's clearly that path through to stills use as well. Whether you think it's going to work or not is another thing, but clearly they're ticking off all those boxes and allowing people to put on pretty much any Canon or Nikon lens, and even, you know, you don't have to have the old manual iris lenses. You can put anything on there. So as you said, as we touched on the other day, we were, you know, out on location and had to sort of spend 10 minutes to try and swap a mount over to try and use a different lens because it was a faster lens. And obviously that would have helped us out greatly if we'd had that option for that shoot.
Yeah. And the only other thing to finish up on today is, as you heard me say, basically, just so glad to hear Ted sounding so good.
Yeah, no, that's terrific news. Good to see you back, Ted.
Yes, yes. Okay, Jace, I'm going to go and trick-or-treat.
You go trick or treat, and we'll definitely, as I said, I think we'll try and catch up sooner rather than later for a show as soon as we can, once dust settles and we've had a bit more time to absorb things.
Until next time, guys, as always, keep the questions coming. We really appreciate you sending us emails. Jase, maybe you can run down where people can send stuff if they want to either follow us or send us emails.
Absolutely. Well, you can get Mike on Twitter at Mike Seymour, and I'm Wingrove on Twitter. And obviously, all the emails and comments, please, to red@fxguide.com.
And thanks to Michael Scott, who was so nice about us on Twitter today. Until next time, guys. See ya.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2009, FX Guide LLC.